potentially lost among the headlines when New York legalized adult-use marijuana and laid the groundwork for a commercial market was what the new law meant for medical marijuana consumers in the state, who have struggled with access and affordability challenges since the program got up and running 5 years ago. To explain the next chapter of medical marijuana in New York, we spoke Wednesday morning to State Senator Diane Savino, a Staten Island Democrat who has championed this issue at the Capitol. Welcome back to the show, Senator, and congrats on the bill.
Well, thank you. So, I'm a little tired today, but, you know, overall, we're all in a good place.
Well, I appreciate you speaking to us on what must be less than, 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah, definitely less.
Well, before the governor signed the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act into law last week, how would you describe the state of the medical marijuana program in New York in terms of those two issues that I mentioned at the top, access and affordability?
Well, I always said it was patients had to travel too far, pay too much, and wait too long. And that was one of the things that we have been trying to correct, I think, since the day the Compassionate Care Act was signed in July of 2014. And, we've taken some incremental steps to improve the program over the years, adding conditions, changing some of the providers who were able to participate. Remember, originally it was only doctors. Then we added nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, and adding conditions like PTSD. But it's been a slow effort to improve a program that was designed to be restrictive because at the time the governor really was very concerned about bringing marijuana to a legal market in any way. And the world has changed a million times since then.
Yeah.
Well, now he loves marijuana.
Loves the stuff. Well,
loves it.
Let's, start with the A's alphabetically. Access, what does this law do to address the access issue?
Well, first and foremost, it will allow the existing, we call them RO, it stands for registered organizations. Those are the 10 license holders in the state of New York who right now only have 4 dispensaries each, to double the number of dispensaries they have. So that'll bring 80 dispensaries to the state, and it will also allow for the expansion of eventually they'll be able to expand into the adult use market, but it will also allow, under the broader MRTA, the development of dispensary-only licenses, which is something I've advocated for from the beginning. You shouldn't have to do everything from seed to sale. So we hope to see some medical dispensary-only outlets, I think, or people who specialize in particular types of medical products. I think there's a lot of excitement for the future of medical, but immediately, double the number of dispensaries, the existing ROs, and the ability to wholesale products to each other.
Do you anticipate that the existing companies will want to take advantage of those additional opportunities, even if they're going to have to compete with potentially a recreational market moving forward?
Oh, absolutely. The other big change for the medical program is, if you recall, in the beginning, one of the lines in the sand for the governor and the Department of Health was that medical marijuana patients would not be able to smoke medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. And that meant that you couldn't sell flower product in New York, which of course drove up the price for patients and for the producers, far more expensive to produce a non-smokable form of marijuana. We repeal that in this expansion and in the MRTA. So for the first time, patients will be able to purchase flower product, whether they choose to smoke it, use it for making tea, or use it for edibles. Some people make their own edibles, interestingly. That will be a game changer for patients. It will dramatically bring down the cost and open up, access for patients in a really profound way. That's a big issue for patients. And with respect to access to the adult use market, there's no doubt that the existing ROs will want to get into the adult use market. But it was also important for the legislature that we not allow them to dominate the adult use market. They're going to get a leg up. They are not going to be able to run the table, though. So there'll be limited opportunities for them. They're going to be able to get in a year before anyone else, and they'll be able to co-locate adult use in up to 3 of their medical dispensaries, and they'll have to pay, a pretty hefty fee, yet to be determined, to be able to participate. But that's as much as they'll be able to do, and we think that strikes the right balance.
You mentioned how the flower legality now is going to be one of the things to bring down the cost of medical marijuana. Are there any other aspects of this law that you think will make medical marijuana more affordable?
Well, in the long run, there will be the ability for medical patients to be able to cultivate up to three plants, so they'll be able to home grow for themselves, up to three plants. And we also have caregivers. You know, there are people who are homebound and they have home health care providers. They can become designated caregivers for them, mm-hmm. and they can cultivate for their patients. They can have up to five patients of their own. So there's going to be some change there, too. It remains to be seen how many medical patients want to home grow, and God bless them. I think they'll find it may be a little bit more complicated than they think, but that will be a game changer, too, for some, because it is less expensive. And finally, we're not done with this, David. We still have a lot of work to do on medical. I'm starting to look at some of the tax issues. It doesn't seem to make sense to me that we're taxing medicine. We don't do that with any other medication. And so I think we need to take a look at maybe repealing or scaling back the excise tax on medical cannabis, particularly as we bring in an adult use market. And then we really need to push for insurance coverage of this. This is medication. Just as anything that you get at CVS or Walgreens is medication, insurance companies should pay for it. We've already gotten a favorable ruling from the workers' compensation system that if you are a medical marijuana patient, workers' comp will cover it. Well, every other insurance carrier should cover it as well. So we got a lot of work to do yet, but what we have seen so far is some pretty positive changes.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're discussing changes to the state's medical marijuana program that were included in the new marijuana legalization law, and our guest is State Senator Diane Savino, a Staten Island Democrat. What do you hear from private insurers when you bring up that issue of getting medical marijuana products covered by their plans?
They go, oh, but it's federally, we're not allowed to do that. And so that's another avenue that we're pursuing. You know, we're starting to see some promising movement on the federal level. Senator Schumer has decided to take this issue on. He's become a big proponent of legalizing it. I saw an interview he did the other day that he's prepared to move on the MORE Act in Washington, whether or not the president is willing to. And that's the kind of leadership we need to see. You know, it's ridiculous. We have 38 states that have legal medical marijuana programs, 14 states and two localities that now have, I think 15 states now, New York would be the 15th, and two localities that have adult use. Our leadership in Washington continues to whistle past the graveyard on this as if we're nothing to see here. It's absurd. You know, minimally legalize medical marijuana or reschedule marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 2 substance, which would allow the existing industry to be able to bank, to deal with their tax liabilities in a less complicated way. It would open up opportunities for entrepreneurs in a way that would make it a lot less complicated to get into the industry and stay in the industry. All of that could be resolved if the federal government would finally just do something sensible on marijuana. So I'm starting to become more optimistic when you see the Senate Majority Leader speak publicly and openly about how he's going to push it through. So maybe we'll finally get some relief out of Washington.
In the last 5 years, the state has been gradually expanding the diseases that qualify patients for medical marijuana. What's the state of that now, considering that, you know, New Yorkers over the age of 21 can simply buy marijuana or possess it legally now and buy it in commercial markets that'll be set up next year? Will every single condition be eligible for medical marijuana in the future?
Yes and no. We still maintain the list of qualifying conditions in the underlying statute. We did expand it to include some new ones, adding things like autism. And look, I'm not saying it cures autism, but there are people who have seen some market improvement for those who are on the spectrum. And so we thought it was necessary to add it here. But then we take it a step further. So we have all of the conditions that are covered, adding a few more. And when we opened up the program to any healthcare practitioner who is licensed to prescribe Schedule II substances in the state of New York, that includes other, you know, like podiatrists and other healthcare providers who can write prescriptions, we then allow them to make a determination for what's in the best interest of their patient. So kind of getting the Department of Health out of the decision-making between patients and doctors. So yes, we still have a condition list. We've expanded that condition list. And then we say, and any other condition that your provider thinks would be benefited by the use of medical cannabis.
Is there a difference in the medical marijuana experience compared to what might happen in the future when the recreational market is set up? Say if someone has, you know, they have anxiety and they are basically self-medicating with, you know, a vape pen every night. Is what they're doing different than what they might experience if they go to a doctor and get a script for medical marijuana?
Yes and no. So first and foremost, there are different forms of cannabis. You know, it's not just about smoking a joint makes you feel better. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt that there are a lot of people who are self-medicating with marijuana. They don't know why it makes them feel better, but it does. Just the same way, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll have a drink after work and it may make them feel better temporarily because they're whatever the issue is. People are complex creatures, right? And we are, sometimes we suffer from chemical imbalances, which is why some people need antidepressants, right? Your brain may not make things that it needs to make you feel good, and mine does. You know, no one understands that yet. But there are thousands of people every day who self-medicate with marijuana. Now, that being said, they would probably benefit if they spent some time speaking to professionals in the medical marijuana field about finding the right type of marijuana that will help them manage their symptoms, because it's not all the same. It's just not. And, you know, sometimes people over self-medicate because they're chasing that wellness feeling, and it's hard to maintain it because they're really not getting the right type of strain that would really help them with their underlying condition. And that's where the difference between the medical and the recreational program comes in.
So why has this been an issue that you've been on the forefront of for more than 7 years now?
You know, it's weird how the funny thing is, I don't like marijuana. It's not my thing. I've never did. What I don't like is stupid public policy. And I hate inconsistency in law. And so when I looked at what was happening with, first on the criminal justice side, on the healthcare side, and seeing how people are suffering, it didn't make any sense. When you know that our healthcare delivery system drives people to dangerous addictive drugs and rewards them for utilizing them when there's something else that could actually be helpful to them. And I've always said, medical marijuana may not help everybody, but they shouldn't be precluded from trying any more than they're precluded from trying 15 other drugs that the FDA approves. You know, it's like, try this. If it doesn't work, try something else. But we have this system set up, and I say it all the time, of good drugs and bad drugs. And if you're lucky, you get to use a good drug. If you're unlucky, you know, you're addicted to bad drugs. It never made any sense to me. And so I thought it was important to, you know, try and create a legal system by which people could get access to treatment that they wanted in a safe way, where they were going to be advised by professionals. Because as you said earlier, anybody could go out and buy marijuana. It's not that hard. But are they getting the kind of product they need to help them deal with their symptoms? Is it safe? Do they know where it came from? You know, can they be sure that the strain they're using hasn't been treated with pesticides? Can they be sure of its safety? That's what we wanted to create, safe, legal, regulated, so patients and users can have confidence in the product that they're putting in their body.
We've been speaking with State Senator Diane Stavino. She is a Staten Island Democrat. Senator, thank you so much for making the time.
You're welcome. Now let me go back to sleep.
Have a good one, Senator.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.